Okay, good evening. Tonight is part number 13 of our series called Life in the Heights. And we are discussing cheese, ice cream, and Fort Tryon Park. Now, there is absolutely no connection between cheese, ice cream, and Fort Tryon Park. However, when Shavuos falls out, not on a Shabbos, you can go into Fort Tryon Park and you can eat cheese and ice cream and have a great old time. If Shavuos falls out on the Shabbos, so we will discuss why that might not be such a good idea, but I have to admit, I do like cheese and ice cream, and I do like Fort Tryon Park. Also, if you have not yet been to Fort Tryon Park, it's awesome. It's one of the best things that we have in this community. Okay, so the story goes as follows. We are talking about three discrete topics tonight. Topic number one is called cheese. The major supermarket, if you could call it that we have in the Heights is called Key Food. And it's right across the street over here on 187. Now, as part of the Life in the Heights series, so people said, Rabbi Schwartz, why don't you comment about some of the cheeses that they sell in Key Food? If you go to Key Food and you walk into the doors and you make a left, and you go near the bread and the wall, the far wall, there is a cheese section in Key Food. Correct? Now, there's a couple of cheese sections, okay. I mean, there's like one very big cheese island.
Yeah.
Right? There's one very big cheese island. Now, the thing about cheese island is some of the cheeses are kosher, certainly. Some of the cheeses are certainly non-kosher. And then there are certain cheeses that are somewhat controversial that have funky hashgachas. So yes. Let's go slowly and we'll talk about what we're talking about. A cheese that is certainly kosher has an OU on it. Agreed? OU, we are modern Orthodox. We believe the OU is actually kosher. So far so good?
Yes.
What? You think it's a joke. No, there are Haredi people, there are Breuers people who won't eat OU. Like, I guess I'm on the record, but I'll say it anyway. When I had a conversation with Rav Mantel, with the Breuers Rav, after the bakery here in town went, as we say in Yiddish, defunct. So one of the questions that came up is, what exactly happened? So the bakery, before it went defunct, switched over to the OU for a while. There was a brief period of time that Gideon's, up on 187th, was under the OU. And Rav Mantel was telling people not to eat there. Right? Why? Because I tried to find out. I'm not exactly sure what he was saying, but he said basically, I think the real issue was it had KAJ beforehand, and then he didn't like the fact that it had the OU. Now, one of the reasons why they had the OU is they wanted to have certain products which would be marked as non-Chol of Yisrael in the store, and the Breuer's policy was not into this. Okay. And in the conversation, Rav Mantel basically said something to me to the effect of that, you know, in the Haredi world, the OU is not an accepted hashgacha. Now, for me, this is like hard to believe. A couple weeks after that, I'm sitting as a dayan on the Din Torah, and the Din Torah is between a certain shul and a certain community. All names and facts have been distorted to protect the innocent and the guilty. And the shul had a catering call, and there was a particular caterer who was hired by the shul to work in the catering call. And for many, many, many years, the caterer was there. And then a new rabbi came in the shul, and the new rabbi said, "Caterer, you can't be in my shul kitchen, because your hashgacha is not good." What was their hashgacha? OU. And I'm like, so like the three Dayanim, we're like all three YU guys, we're sitting there, we're like, aha. So this Din Torah is whether the OU is a reliable hashgacha. And this rabbi's like, absolutely. I'm like, okay, I guess we'll have a Din Torah about whether the OU is a reliable hashgacha. So he's like, which hashgacha do you recognize? So this guy says he recognizes a particular Vad HaKashrus. So, okay, wonderful. So we say, can we speak to the head of that Vad HaKashrus? 100%. So we call the head of the Vad HaKashrus, and we ask him, Rabbi so-and-so, tell me, does your Vad use the OU? Absolutely. Why? The OU is a reliable hashgacha. Okay, thank you very much. That was the Din Torah. It was actually but that was the Din Torah. I don't know exactly what was going on over there. Now, So, the issue with cheese. There are certain cheeses across the street that have a very fine hashgacha, they have the OU. Other cheeses have no hashgacha, so the assumption is it's not kosher. Then, there are cheeses that have certain funky hashgachas. Okay, so the funky hashgachas that they have, I actually took a field trip today during lunch to look at the cheese section. So there's some cheeses that have like a luchos with a K on it.
Yeah,
that's right? And then there's another cheese that says kosher, like in Hebrew letters, and like a little K with a crown on top of the kosher. No. Right? That's another cheese. So, what's the story of these hashgachas? So, first thing, when you want to find information, you go to Hagoyin HaGadol, the greatest scholar of our generation, known as Google. So you go to Google, and you say, "Dear Google, please tell me the status of the cheese from, let's say, the Luchos K, the Tablet K." So, Google sends me to an article that was in Moment magazine of March 10th, 2015. Okay, Moment is a pretty reputable publication. I like Moment. In my previous life, when I used to have to read magazines for President Richard Joel to earn my living, so Moment was one of the better ones. You'll forgive me for saying this. It was a million times better than Lilith.
The what?
Lilith.
It's a different animal.
Okay. Agreed. Fine. So let's read this article together. When Brent Delman was growing up in Cleveland, his culturally Jewish family, like their Eastern European forebears, ate lots of soft, fresh cheese, cream cheese, sour cream, cottage cheese, without worrying much about whether it was kosher. After all, cheese is just curdled milk. As long as it's not eaten with meat, what could be treif? In some cases, it's that simple, at least for the soft cheeses common to Eastern European cuisines. As long as other ingredients are kosher and the cheese is prepared using sterilized equipment, the cheeses are considered kosher. But as Delman, the specialty food supplier, learned when he went to the business making and selling kosher cheese as the cheese guy, okay, that's who he is, so hard cheeses such as, how do you pronounce it, Gouda? Gouda, cheddar, blue cheese are another story. It's all about the rennet, Dolman says. Now, historically, rennet, which is a complex of enzymes found in the linings of a calf's stomach. That's absolutely true. Okay, rennet is, cows and other kosher animals, what they do is they chew their cud, which means that they chew the food, then it goes into the stomach, then it comes back, then it goes back. And a cow has four different stomachs, correct? Anyone of you took high school bio and remember this? Not so much fun, right? But the thing is that there is an enzyme called rennet, which can coagulate milk and make it into cheese. And that's inside a calf's stomach. Sometimes you could actually shecht an animal and you will find cheese inside the animal. It can happen, right? Again, in our world, not as much because the animals that we shecht are not the animals that are really nursing, etc. They feed them. It's like a specialty thing. But rennet is required to coagulate milk and ripen it into hard cheese. The problem with rennet is not mixing milk and meat. The rabbis long ago ruled that the amount of animal enzyme required in cheese making is too minuscule for that. Now that's actually an oversimplification of a halacha in Yerideya Simen Pei Zayin. The question is, how come any cheese is kosher if you make cheese by putting milk into an animal's stomach? Ah! Right, was that loud enough? That's baser b'cholot. Right? So, what? So we're not cooking it, it's cold. However, there is a halach of davar charif, of like a very sharp thing that can merge the tastes. Mm-hmm. And the rennet is really sharp. So the Rishonim are bothered by this kasha. And the Rishonim basically say that the rennet inside the calf's stomach, either it is considered davar shel heter, that doesn't make it basar b'cholav. Alternatively, there's a small amount, it's cold. There's a number of reasons that Rishonim give in the beginning of Simon Pei Zayin and if both. However, the problem is that hard cheese is made by non-Jews. Going back to Talmudic times, the rabbis feared that rennet enzyme they added to the milk might come from a non-kosher animal, an animal not properly ritually slaughtered, or the cheese might be otherwise contaminated. As a result, they prohibited cheese made by a non-Jew, which they called Gevinas Akum.
To ensure that non-kosher ingredients are not used, a rabbi was required to add the rennet and supervise the production of the cheese, in effect making it Jewish cheese. Okay? So kosher cheese has to be made by a Jew, according to Moment Magazine. Now, Moment Magazine is paskening like the Shach, not like the Ramah. The Ramah paskens in Shulchan Aruch, and we'll see the sources in a few minutes, that in order to make cheese kosher, a Jew has to watch the cheese making, but a Jew doesn't have to take the clunk of rennet and throw it into the vat of milk. A Jew just has to watch it. The Shach paskens, the Jew has to make the cheese itself. In the Breuer's community, traditionally, there were two different cheeses. There was Migdal and Ha'olam. And the differences may be along these lines.
Which one is which?
Ha'olam is the firmer brand. I mean, there's also a difference between Migdal and Ha'olam, whether they're using Chol of Yisrael milk to begin with. That's like another thing. But basically, the rabbi is required to add rennet and supervise production of the cheese, making Jewish cheese, as it's been called for centuries. Although generally this meant that Jews simply did not eat hard cheese, there is one notable exception. Now, this is absolutely not true. Right? Jews always ate hard cheese. But the Jews ate hard cheese that was made by a Jew. Or the Jews ate hard, right? In other words, in communities, the Jews always ate hard cheese, but it wasn't as common. Nonetheless, this is correct that there was a notable exception. In his commentary on the Talmud, the medieval scholar Rabbeinu Tam records that the Jews of 20th century Narbonne in southern France did in fact eat gavinas akum, hard cheese made by non-Jews. Why? Because it was made not from animal rennet, but from plant enzymes. Okay, this is what the Rishonim call hu'amad ba'asavim. You can effectively get the enzyme to make cheese out of the stomach of an animal, in which case it certainly has to be overseen at least by a Jew, or you can make the same enzyme through various grasses and flowers and the like. The Jews in Narbonne, right, in southern France, which we call the French Riviera, which is also called Provence, right, the Jews over there would eat Goyish cheese because since all the cheese that they had in Narbonne was Hu'amad Ba'asavim, was made with other enzymes. By the way, today you can also have really cheap cheese that are made with synthetic enzymes. Right? You can make everything synthetic today. Right? It's kind of amazing. But there were Jews who ate what we would call Gvinas Akum. Nevertheless, the legal codes of Maimonides in the 12th century and Joseph Caron the 16th, not Rabbi Nutam, carried the day in the Jewish religious world. To this day, most Orthodox Jews follow legal codes that basically outlaw cheese made by non-Jews, even if the cheese is made using non-animal enzymes. Of course, there's more than one opinion on the matter. Because all hard cheese made in the United States is produced using microbial or plant enzymes, some argue it's a non-issue. Many Jews who pay attention to kashrut, for example, the rabbis of the Conservative Rabbinical Assembly, believe there was a Rabbi Klein, who was a conservative rabbi, who wrote a tshuva already in the 1950s, permitting gavinas akum. I actually had a hard time getting the tshuva, so Rabbi Noah Bickart obtained the tshuva for me. And the conservative movement has been using gavinas akum for a long time, relying in part on the Rabbeinu Tam, right? Because if the hard cheese is made from rennet substitutes, the problem of eating non-Jewish cheese does not go away. Even some kashrut agencies run by Orthodox rabbis, for example, Tablet K and KORC. KORC is a hashgacha from San Francisco that's officially an Orthodox hashgacha. KORC and Tablet K will say that cheese is kosher if they know it comes from microbial enzymes, if they know it's coming from Hu'amad Ba'asavim, and they will say the cheese is kosher. This is not accepted Orthodox halacha. So now, if you are eating tablet K cheese, you are relying on that position of the Rabbeinu Tam, which is not accepted la halacha. So the cheese across the street with the tablet K, I would strongly recommend avoid it. Yeah. Now, what about the kosher K with the crown? So here's the thing. The way hashgacha works in the United States is it works by a trademark. Which means I patent my symbol, my OU, my Kuf K, my OK, I patent it. And I will sue your pants off if you put your Kuf K, OK, OU on your product without me giving you, pardon, the OK to put the OK on. Right? This will take us to our ice cream discussion in 5 minutes. Right? It is trademark infringement. That's the way it operates. But anyone can make their own trademark. So, the cheese company that they have across the street, I'm blanking on its name, that has the kosher K on it. It says Kuf Shin Resh, right? With like a little crown. That's right there, right next to the cheese by the cheese guy. And we'll talk about the cheese guy in a second. We'll talk about it more. But that cheese has no hashgacha whatsoever. That particular company decided to make a trademark for themselves called Kosher K. That looks like a kosher symbol, but it ain't no kosher symbol. There is no one behind it. It is just the owner of that particular cheese company made a sign. Anyone can make a sign. Oh my God. Well,
that's really
New York State, actually.
It, what?
New York State has some kind of laws about it.
There is New York State kosher laws which say that if you advertise that you're kosher, you have to maintain some kosher standards. These people just have a symbol that it is there. It is the trademark of that particular company. I spent a while today conversing with somebody who's very knowledgeable on kashras. And he's like, oh, the kosher K, that's like the biggest scandal out there. Okay, so now, if the yeshiva world would want to cover a scandal in Washington Heights, that's it. Right? That's the scandal.
It's certainly better than some other scandals.
That, oh yeah, oh my gosh, right? In other words, hey, this does not involve cameras or anything, but it's still a scandal. By the way, that's one of the big issues in kashrus today, in terms of cheese making. If you assume, like the Ramah, that a Jew only has to watch the making of a cheese, some of these places that manufacture cheese, some of the better cheeses are manufactured, are made out in the rural areas of Scotland. Mm. No? There's some good stuff, apparently, that they... Now, can you, as a matter of kashrus, not have a mashgiach there, watching the cheese the whole time, but have cameras set up? That is being used by more and more kashrus agencies today. Cameras are awesome. Right, and it allows you, right? Again, sometimes cameras are really bad, but sometimes cameras are awesome, and they allow you to supervise a product as being kosher from a faraway distance. But it only helps if the person there in Scotland can't turn off the camera without you knowing. No? If they could turn it off, and they could divert it, so then nothing helps. So the basic story is Tablet K. Now, I should point out, okay, here's the mistake. There are two different Tablet Ks in this country. There is a Tablet K from Denver, and there is a Tablet K that is this Tablet K. This Tablet K, the luchos don't go all the way down. It's basically around a quarter of the way from the top. There's like a bent-in luchos. We don't have any luchos here. But like around a quarter of the way from the top, it's bent in. You could also make luchos that there's a line going all the way down. The one that has the line going all the way down is Tablet K from Denver. That is a very fine hashgacha. Oh. The one that is the Tablet K, that is an Orthodox hashgacha relying on what we consider Gvinas Akum. That is not all the way down. There are two different Tablet Ks. Yes?
That's the one thing. If I put on Rebbeinu Tam's tefillin, I'm considered super duper frilled, right? But if I eat his cheese, I'm
So if you put on Rebbeinu Tam's tefillin and you don't wear Rashi tefillin, you are not frum. You are a person who's not wearing tefillin, according to the majority opinion. If you wear Rashi tefillin and you wear Rebbeinu Tam's tefillin, and you wear Rebbeinu Tam's tefillin without a bracha, big whoop. Right?
So
if
we both cheeses, I should be in the same category.
No! It doesn't work like that. Right? Come on. But now, it happens, there is a tradition out there. Actually, uncertain whether I should repeat this, but I will say it anyway because I have very little filter.
In Rav Schechter's second volume, called Mipnine Harav, he writes that Rav Soloveitchik said that he had a family practice to follow the Rabbeinu Tam. Rav Soloveitchik, for cheese. So Rav Soloveitchik in the early years when he was in Boston would eat Kraft cheese. Because he said, my family, my grandfather, very frum, they followed the Rabbeinu Tam. That's our family tradition. Great. What happened was someone investigated Kraft cheese in those years, like in the 50s, and found out that some of the Kraft cheese actually used some sort of lard in it. So Rav Soloveitchik stopped using Kraft cheese. Right? I mean, the Rav had like more about this. He would just like say this over in his shir sometimes about how you can rely on the Rabbeinu Tam if you have such a position. Maybe we'll talk about that in 2 minutes. But this is the first issue, the issue of cheese in the height. Just to go through the Gemaras very quickly, it's actually Torah. Rabbi Yehuda Shah, Rabbi Yishma, Rabbi Yehoshua, Kishayu, Mahalchem, Bederech. There, Rabbi Yishma asked Rabbi Yehoshua when they're taking a walk, he says, Mipneima Asru Gevinos Akum. How come non-Jewish cheese is forbidden? Akum, by the way, we paskin, means not only idolaters, but any non-Jew, the cheese is non-kosher. Just like Bishul Akum, first of all, does not mean cannibalism in halacha. Bishakim does not mean that you cook the non-Jew. Bishakim means that the non-Jew cooks, right? And Bishakim means any non-Jew, even if it's not someone who's an Oved Avodah Zarah. You can have a very honest Muslim, a wonderful guy. By the way, the last four, I've been using Lyft a lot lately. My wife tells me that it's better than Uber for various reasons, so I've been using Lyft. My last four Lyft drivers have all been named Mohammed and have been the nicest guys. And we've had really good conversations. So I don't know what that's worth, right? But Islam is not Avodah Zarah, right? No. Islam is not Avodah Zarah. Again, a Jew cannot worship Islam, but it's not Avodah Zarah for them, certainly. So if a non-Jew, a Muslim, cooks food for us, it's still treif. Bishul Akum applies. The cheese made by a Muslim is still treif. So how come they asked it? So the Gemara has a few reasons. One reason is they use a keva of nevela. They use the stomach of a non-kosher animal. Other reasons are mishum nikor. Nikor is, I'm just going through the Gemara, the underlying parts. Nikor means that they leave it exposed, and there is a concern that snakes will inject their venom into it. There's a din in the Gemara called Mayim Megulim, that if you leave water out for enough time for a snake to get into it, so it's going to become usher to drink that water, because maybe there's snake venom in it. We generally assume that in our countries we don't have snakes. We don't have enough venomous snakes around to make it a problem. When the Chazon Ish first moved to Bnei Brak, he started being machmir on Mayim Megulim, because he said, look around, there's like snakes everywhere, right? I mean, again, Bnei Brak is much more built up now than it was when the Chazon Ish first lived there. So the second reason is Nikor. The third reason is She'yev Shalom B'lot Tzach Tzuchei Cholov. Inside cheese, you're always going to have pockets of milk. And milk of non-Jews has to be supervised to know that they are milking a cow, not milking a sow, right? Soft C, little C, what begins with C, right? So the point is that it could be non-kosher because of the tzuchi cholov. The other approach in the Gemara is mamidim ba'ar kevas nevela. The Gemara then said, they shemachlikim paneho b'shuman chazir. They put some chazer shmelt. They put some pig fat. Mamidin also b'chometz. Sometimes they use vinegar. Vinegar of non-Jews is treif, because it's like the wine of non-Jews, which is treif. The other reason is mipneishim mamidin also b'sraf orla, that they use orla fruits, etc. And then I give you the Taisvis that quotes the Rabbeinu Tam, that the main reason la halacha is nikur is because of the snakes, and since we live in France and we don't have that many snakes, therefore our cheese is going to be kosher. That's what the Rabbeinu Tam says, and then he quotes at the top of the next page that the Gaonim of Narbona permitted it. The Gaonim in southern France permitted it. Now, I should point out that this issue of cheese with like funky hashgachas is rapidly becoming a big deal. There is a rabbi down in the D.C. area who's been publishing halachic statements. Rabbi Chaim Ovadia is his name. He's a member of the Beltway Vad, which is the Vad that self-identifies as being open Orthodox. And in the Beltway Vad, he's been publishing halachic position papers that maybe cheese is all kosher because of the same Rabbi Nutam, which is something the conservative movement has been doing since the 1950s. Not accepted by halacha, Shulchan Aruch paskins against the Rabbeinu Tam. Right? The Rambam writes that even if it's hemuda ba'asavim, the cheese is non-kosher, ve'ein lefrotz geder, and don't break this wall. In other words, we don't follow the Rabbeinu Tam. That's what the generally accepted halacha is. This fellow, this Rabbi Chaim Ovadia, has been paskining that Gvinas Akum, what we would call Gvinas Akum, is actually kosher. And to the best of my knowledge, this is being relied on more and more. There is a group who is certifying certain vegan restaurants down in the D.C. area with a hashgacha. But the hashgacha is relying on the fact that vegan basically is not a problem at all, that there's no Bishul Akum, because they have certain coolers with Bishul Akum. There's like a power strip that's plugged into the wall or the like, and it's turned on by a Jew, and therefore that's okay. Most assume that the Jew has to be involved somewhat in the actual fire. Right? If the Jew turns on the fire, the Jew raises the fire, that makes it Bishul Yisrael, according to Ashkenazi Psak. But the power strip doesn't help, probably. And they're relying on the fact that there's no issue of chometz akum, that the vinegar is non, that the vinegar is going to be kosher, because this Rabbi Chaim Ovadia contends that maybe only vinegar that was originally manufactured to be wine and then became vinegar is treif. But if it was originally manufactured to be vinegar, he contends that it's kosher. So I discussed this with Rav Schechter a few months ago, and he's like, what? Say it again? And like, I had to say it to him like 3 or 4 times, like, say it again. He's like, it doesn't say that in Shulchan Aruch. Who says that? Like, it's an interesting idea, but like, no one says it. It's a very novel idea in the world of kashrus.
How about bugs?
What?
How about bugs?
So the bug issue, there are certain opinions that anything that you don't see crawling is not really a bug. That actually is more reliable than some of these other things. There is more to rely on with that. But in terms of Gvinas Akum, my understanding is that that particular Vad down in the D.C. area is giving Hashgacha based on Rabbi Chaim Ovadia, based on following the Rabbi Nutam, which is like tablet K, K-O-R-C, really not accepted by Halacha. It's really a problem. So that is issue number one that we want to discuss about life in the Heights and cheese in the Heights. Issue two, the yeshiva world. Today, the yeshiva world. You ever like clicked on one of their videos? They have like this little diddly that they play, whatever. So in the yeshivaworld.com today, they write, it has come to our attention that there is an ice cream truck bearing the name The Very Best that circulates in the Washington Heights section of New York City that prominently displays an unauthorized Kufkan OU symbol on the truck as if to state it's kosher certified. The truck serves soft as well as other prepared items, all of which are not kosher certified. Okay, so two things about the yeshiva world. One thing is that they bring news out. Two, they are, like many news organizations, not completely precise. These trucks are going around the Heights. It took me some time to get to the bottom of this today. These trucks are going around the Heights. The trucks serve soft ice cream and hard ice cream. The soft ice cream is not certified. It's not. Now, that doesn't mean it's non-kosher. But there's no one telling you that it is kosher. They have a Kuf K and an OU on the truck. Now, first of all, word to the wise, Most trucks would not have both a Kuf K and an OU, right? Because that would cost a lot of money. So what they are doing is it is trademark infringement. No, we actually had this. The yogurt store down on 181st at one time had an OU in their window, and I was working with them. I wanted to certify them at that time, and the guy got a letter, one of those killer letters from the OU lawyers. The OU has a large legal department whose job is to send out letters. Oh, you have an unauthorized OU. So, it's an unauthorized OU. Certainly the soft ice cream is not certified. The hard ice cream that they serve on these trucks can be packaged or non-packaged. The packaged stuff, some of it is kosher. If you take a package of ice cream and it has a Kuf K, an OU, a Kuf K, a block, whatever, a reputable halacha, halachically acceptable hashgacha, it's fine. No? So the yeshiva world is not fully precise over here. Because they write, the trucks are soft, serve, as well as other prepared items, all of which are not kosher certified. That's not true. So like when we sent out the thing today on the Shul's Facebook page, we sent it out to say the prepared products you have to check for hashgacha. I don't think this is like such a big chiddush. Some of them... So that's the story over there. Again, hashgacha basically works based on trademark infringement. Okay, the last thing that I wanted to discuss, which has nothing to do with cheese or ice cream, it's not even milchik, is Fort Tryon Park and why there's no Eruv in Fort Tryon Park. So without belaboring the point, there are two reasons, both practical and halachic. Practically, the parks department is very hard to deal with. That's, you know, if we would want, in theory, we could enclose part of Fort Tryon Park. Probably not the whole thing, which I'll discuss in a minute, but if we could put some lines up in the park, we could enclose a good chunk of the usable space in Fort Tryon Park. But park department is very hard to deal with. That's a practical reason. The halachic reason, I give you a few sources about this, is there's a din of a karfef yosemi beis asayim that's not hukaf adira. Okay, here's the story. In halacha, on Shabbos, there's a rishus hayachid, which is a private domain. We paskin to be a rishus hayachid, you need three walls or four walls. If it has three walls, one, two, three, right? That's like a chaf, by the way. Or four walls, which is like a box. That, and each wall is 10 tefachim tall, so let's say 36 inches tall, 38 inches tall, so that's a Rishos HaYachid. Rishos HaRabim, halachically, is an area that the public uses and uses and uses, where it's very open, and we generally follow those opinions that you need 600,000 people who pass on that main street every day, then it becomes a Rishos HaRabim. Then the halacha has these in-between things. One of these in-between things is called the Carmelis, which is an area that in some respects is like a Rishus HaYoch, in other respects like a Rishus HaRabim. And one of the examples of a Carmelis in halacha is this thing called a Karfef. A Karfef is an area that people don't live in. It's like a very open field and no one lives in it. Mm. So it's not real like a Rishus HaYochid, because a Rishus HaYochid is like a private space where people live. It's not real like a Rishus HaRabim, because it's not a thoroughfare. So it's an area that al pi halacha, midrabbanan, you're not allowed to carry in. Now, the story is if you have a karfef that is more than two sa'ah, each sa'ah is 50 amos by 50 amos, so two sa'ahs is, according to math majors, 100 amos by 50 amos, no? I always made this mistake in high school. When you add an area that's 50 by 50 to an area that's 50 by 50, you get 100 by 50.
Yeah.
Right? Not 100 by 100. Just math majors, no? Okay, so you get 100, right? You just imagine two boxes. So a karfef that is more than two sa'ah, and people don't live in it, it's not hukaf ladira, you're not allowed to carry in that area. Next, if that area is not closed off from the rest of the community, it can aser the rest of the community. What? Meaning, if I have an entire town that is enclosed by Erev wire,
yeah,
but part of the town is this area that people don't live in.
Part of the town closed by the area.
Inside the circle of the town, inside the town's perimeter, you have, let's say, a cemetery, right? People don't live in a cemetery. Dead people live in a cemetery. Gotcha?
Yeah.
So if you have a cemetery in middle of the town's Eruv, that cemetery could passel the entire Eruv unless the cemetery is fenced off.
Okay.
So, inside Fort Tryon Park, we have certain areas that are more than 50 amos by 100 amos, which is, let's say, 200 feet by 100 feet, for argument's sake, that people can't live in. Right? The halacha is, if you have an area that's full of trees, people could live there. If the area is zera'im, if there are seeds, people can't live there. And that's what the halacha says. And there are certain areas in Fort Tryon that you can't walk, that you can't do anything with. So according to the vast majority of poskim, that would invalidate the Eruv. Now, this was a huge conversation, like, in the 50s, when the Manhattan Eruv controversy was brewing, and Central Park has... So Rabbi Mendel Kasher was matir the Manhattan Eruv, and he said Central Park does not invalidate the entire Manhattan Eruv, even though Central Park also has areas it could go through, because he found a Me'iri, that the Me'iri on that Sugyan, Chaf Gimel, in Erevin, the Me'iri writes that if it's meant for Hiluch B'nei Adam, if it's a space that people walk through and people use, so therefore it's not called a Karfeif. That Me'iri is a minority opinion. That's what the old Manhattan Erev relied on. Now the Manhattan Erev is basically divided, that there is an east side Erev and a west side Erev, but there's also an Erev that goes through the park. To use the Eruv in the park is very problematic because of this Karfeif issue, the same as the Fort Tryon Park is problematic because of the Karfeif issue. Unlike Fort Tryon, which for us is like at the outskirts of our Eruv and we'd have to put wires there, Central Park is, ready, in the center of the city. So you could build an Eruv around it, so the practical issue isn't there. So they have the halachic issue. Again, some poskim are meiko, like that Me'iri that Rav Kasher found. I give you a bir halacha, he quotes a tshuva, the Dvar Shmuel, there are different ways of understanding the Dvar Shmuel, whatever it is, there are possible leniencies, but given that practically it's a problem, and halachically it's very difficult, we announce in our show every Shabbos that the Fort Tryon Park is not in the Eruv. End of conversation, I think. Okay, guys, thank you for coming and listening.
Is that to do with animals? Because I was in communication with Rabbi Backoff, and he indicated there's an area with animals. Why?
So if there are animals there, and the area is not used to drink by the animals, that's a further conversation. Those are all details of this broader category. Yeah. There's a discussion, let's say you have a big lake, right? So there's a machlokas in Rashi and the Rashi. If the lake has drinkable water, then it's okay. If the lake has water that you could use for laundry, so it's only okay according to the Rashi, but not according to Rashi. That's also an issue in Central Park. They have a big lake in the middle of the park, no?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whatever. There's a lot to talk about. Thank you for coming. Have a good night.
Yeah.